Music producer Willie Mitchell passed away this week. You may not know his name, but you probably know his sound. He was the producer and arranger behind a string of hits by Al Green in the 1970s. Those recordings and many more were part of a body of work which spanned six decades. The 81-year-old musician died Tuesday of cardiac arrest in the city he helped put on the musical map, Memphis, Tennessee. Here's NPR's Felix Contreras.
Willie Mitchell's story is one of a musician who stayed true to his roots, both cultural and musical, and spun gold from those beginnings. He was born in Mississippi, but raised in Memphis. And when he was released from the Army in 1954, he returned to Memphis and helped establish it as the soul music capital of the South. Mitchell had a few regional hits before moving from the bandstand to the mixing board in 1960, producing sessions for vocalists Lee Rogers, Ann Peebles, and Ovi Wright. Mitchell did his first sessions for High Records at a movie house turned recording studio. Royal Studios was located just a few blocks from the Stax Recording Studio in South Memphis. Mitchell never worked anywhere else.
If you walk in that room at Royal, it's like a circus tent.
Memphis-based freelance journalist Andrea Lyle visited Royal many times. Mitchell bought the studio in 1970, and Lyle says he didn't change much over the years.
It's covered in burlap that drapes down from the ceiling, down the walls, and it sloped because it was a movie theater. And, you know, you've got the vocal booth, and of course you've got Al's mic, which is, in fact, the microphone that Al Green recorded his greatest stuff on in the 1970s.
Willie Mitchell started working with a young soul singer named Albert Green at the beginning of that decade. And in just over 2 years, Mitchell and Green produced seven singles that each sold over 1 million copies. In an interview with NPR in 2000, both Al Green and Willie Mitchell pulled back the curtain on Mitchell's skills as a producer for the 1972 hit Let's Stay Together.
I'm in here trying to blow the studio top off. And Willie kept saying, no, just say it. I'm going like, I think I need to just muscle up and sing it. He said, don't try to handle the song, Al. Just let the song happen. Just let it ooze out.
I wanted this golden voice on it. And he kept giving me somebody else's voice. That's why we just kept going over and over and over and over again. When he nailed it, I said, that's the one.
Mitchell and Green parted ways in 1976, but Royal Studios stayed busy. In the 1980s, Keith Richards recorded a solo album there. Even Al Green returned in 1989. More recently, it was John Mayer and Rod Stewart. They all trekked to Memphis, hoping to tap into a bit of the Mitchell magic. They could have gone anywhere to make records, but journalist Andrea Lyle says Memphis was as much a part of the Mitchell sound as any piece of equipment in Royal Studios.
Willie knew the magic was Memphis, and he didn't need to go anywhere else. Everybody came to him.
Mitchell's son will take over production at the legendary studio, and if future generations of musicians travel to Memphis to record, they'll know exactly where to find Royal Studios. It sits on a street that was recently renamed Willie Mitchell Boulevard. Felix Contreras, NPR News.
With much of the country in a deep freeze this week, it might make for good therapy to daydream a bit about summer. My Flame is the summary title of the new CD by Laura Veers. Veers is known for writing and singing songs about nature, the great outdoors, and this new album, her seventh, is no exception. She joins us from the studios of Oregon Public Broadcasting in Portland. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, we're great, and thanks so much for joining us. So I want to start by asking you about this title track, July Flame, which I gather is actually named after a peach?
It is. It's a variety of peach that's grown in Oregon, and I was at the farmer's market a couple years ago and saw the title for the variety and thought, that's a good song title. I should write a song about that. And then I did, and it turned out to be a good song and ended up being the title of the record as well.
You grew up in Colorado and then studied geology and Mandarin Chinese at college. That's quite a combo.
Yeah, I started off with the Chinese because I took a year off before college and went to Malaysia to live with my family for a year. So my dad, he's a physics professor and he was teaching at a college over there. And I decided to go and teach English and poke around and travel around Asia. And I ended up in China where my cousins were and became fascinated with the language and the written form in particular I thought was so beautiful. I decided I wanted to pursue that in college, and so I did and went back to China several times and got pretty good at spoken Mandarin. I learned about 2,000 characters, and now I feel like I probably only know about 20
because these things go. It happens with foreign languages, doesn't
yeah.
it?
If you don't use them, they go. And so at that point, I was a geology major, and I decided it would be cool for my senior project to put my interests of Chinese and geology together into one project and go over to learn about geology and field assist in the Taklamakan Desert, which is in the northwest part of China.
Okay.
And I ended up not really feeling very great about the geology side of things, and I wasn't a very good translator either because no one there speaks Mandarin Chinese. So, and I didn't know that ahead of time.
A fatal flaw in your plans there. But you
totally
did get something
fatal.
Out of it. You brought your guitar
in. I did. I bought this really crappy guitar in Beijing. It was like $5 and the action was really high. The strings were way off the neck, but I was able to push them down and write some songs. And it was the beginning of my feelings though that I want to be a writer. But ultimately I realized that working with melody and words was my favorite thing, not just words alone on the page, and so I started taking songwriting more seriously after that.
In a green
And you wrote these songs on, this is another crappy guitar, apparently, as you call it. This is a theme for you, the crappy guitar.
Yeah.
Tell me why. Describe the process for me.
It's a guitar. It's a nylon string Goya. It's probably not terribly crappy. If I tried to sell it, I'd probably get a couple $100. But it's a
so
guitar that we have.
So you've moved past the $5 days.
Yeah, up to $200.
Okay.
But it was a guitar lying around the house growing up, and I started playing it during Christmas holidays when I started to write songs, like in my 20s. I would come home and play it, and I realized, wow, there are a lot of songs in this guitar. Like, I just would sit down to play it, and songs would come out, and I realized I needed to take it off my dad's hands and bring it home. And since then, I've recorded it on every album and written tons and tons of songs on it, and it just, I think it was Neil Young who said songs, certain guitars have songs in them. I hope it's Neil Young, I'm not sure, but that one has a lot of songs in it.
She can really play it, she can really lay it down. Smile, good vibrations, help me ronda homeward bound.
Tell me about another song on the album, Carol Kay. This is Carol Kay, the famous bass player and session musician. Was she an inspiration of yours?
Yeah, she was. She has an amazing presence on so many different records. She's the most recorded bass player of all time. And she grew up for part of her life in Everett, Washington, which is close to where we live. And I was just fascinated with her story. And then when I started listening to her bass parts, I was blown away. I mean, she's just so inventive and creative on the bass. And it's no wonder she was called upon as like the number one session player in much of the 60s and 70s.
Mission Impossible, love, she's out of this world. 10,000 sessions from an Everett, Washington girl.
speaking with singer and songwriter Laura Veers about your new CD, July Flame. One of the songs on here, Little Deschutes, am I saying that right?
Yes.
That's such a rich, lush sound in this song. Is that what you were aiming for?
Yes. I mean, I think most of the songs on this album hold up pretty well on their own just with an instrument and a voice, and that was my goal going into it. But this one, we piled a lot of stuff on various drone sounds and the string sounds of Stephen Barber, who's an arranger who lives in Austin. And I love the way it turned out. I think it's a really beautiful piece of music that captures a canoe trip that we took to the Little Deschutes River a couple years ago.
Peace out.
On your way to tour in Europe later this month, do you find the experience touring overseas different from touring here in the States?
Honestly, you get better treatment over there. especially in France, I love to tour there because at the venue you'll come in and do sound check, and then they'll clear the room and bring in these big wooden tables, and the whole staff, including the ticket sellers and the merch sellers and the lighting people in the band and everybody who's involved in the show will eat dinner together in the room. It's a very bonding thing. It makes it feel like a special show.
Right, more of a team effort.
Yeah, and here you'll often, you know, we're not playing theaters yet, so you'll walk into the bar and they'll give you your $10 buyout and then you'll go find a place to eat and then you'll come back. And it's very more individual. But it's just, I've focused more on Europe, honestly, because I got my start there and I had momentum there. So I have some catching up to do here, but I feel optimistic about this record and people in this country responding well to it as well.
And we'll see you on tour here in the States in February, right?
Yes.
Great. Laura Veers talking about her new CD, July Flame, which comes out Tuesday on her own record label called Raven Marching Band Records. She joined us from the studios of Oregon Public Broadcasting in Portland. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You can hear Laura Veers' complete album as part of our exclusive First Listen series at nprmusic.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
If you've heard the band OK Go, it may have been on the internet. Viewers clicked on the band's 2006 video, Here It Goes Again, 50 million times. It showed four goofy guys on treadmills in skinny pants and neckties. They leap, jog, slide, and duck from treadmill to treadmill. 3 minutes of video led to nearly 3 years of nonstop touring. Next week, OK Go has a new album coming out. It's called Of the Blue Color of the Sky. Singer Damian Kulash and bass player Tim Nordwind were inspired this time by a record they first played in elementary school, Prince's Purple Rain.
I mean, I remember hearing it as a 12-year-old kid, and it made me jump on my bed. It made me feel like crying. Like, it really sort of fills the spectrum of emotions, which I think this record that we made kind of also does a little bit.
This is Damian, the singer. And what's weird about Purple Rain is that it's such a sexy record, and I didn't know what any of that meant at 12, you know? Like, when Nikki started to grind, I was like, she should get, like, a mouth guard or something. I had no idea what he was talking about. But the, like, emotional propulsion of that song is still, I mean, there's like, it's so raunchy even before you know what sex is, you know?
Right, right. And even the way in one of the songs, I think it's Skyscrapers, you shriek.
Oh, yeah. There's a real, there's
That's a very Prince-y shriek.
It's a very Prince-y shriek.
Now, you recorded this album far, far away from where you live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is Tim. Yeah, we recorded in Fredonia, New York, which is almost Canada. We were basically locked up for 12 weeks in a converted Amish barn. There were like 24 feet of snow every day, and there were some weeks where, you know, we just wouldn't even leave the cabin because we lived and recorded in this barn, basically.
So how much of the sound, this new sound, because the sound, it's got a lot of effects on it, and what's it called with the guitar kind of sounding like it's...
Exploding.
Exploding, yeah. Or overmodulated.
Yeah, there was a lot of plugging stuff in, you know? It's sort of like, that sounds awesome, let's plug in something else. So it makes it very spontaneous at the same time that it's very overthought, you know? And that's a good process for us because we're people who tend to overthink everything.
Give me an example off this album of some of that spontaneity that you just mentioned.
The song Skyscrapers, the end of that song, the way we tracked that was Dan, the drummer, and me, Damien, I was playing guitar. At the end, Dan was supposed to sort of just watch me for a cue to end the song, but he'd gotten really, really into the groove. And so the entire guitar solo at the end of that song, which is like 45 seconds, is me trying to get his attention, just trying to get him to look up. And I never would have written a guitar solo that way, but it's perfect for the song.
Yeah, that is great.
Should we hear it?
Sure.
Look up, Dan. Dan. I mean, if there's ever a cue to stop a song, it's like, Dan, I'm not even playing. It was just one
note. Yeah, it's just one note, man. Anytime.
Is it just me, or is there a tone of melancholy throughout this album?
The record sort of is kind of, I think, our attempt to find hope in hopeless situations. You know, we toured for 31 months on our last record, and that basically destroys everything in your life.
It takes a toll on you emotionally, personally.
So you both sacrificed personal relationships for the band?
Not intentionally, necessarily. But you wind up 3 years later a totally different person, unsure of how you've gotten there, kind of.
And it's a strange thing to look back, and eventually we all sort of ended up at a point where all of a sudden we were back at home sitting in some chair or in our bed going like, oh my God, I think we won a Grammy. I'm not quite sure, but I think I remember that.
Well, and, you know, I hate being complaining like, oh, it's so difficult being on tour, because it's not. It's wonderful. I mean, it's a dream come true. But you sometimes when you get your dreams, then you realize, like, when you come back to real life, like, this is my life.
Is there a song on this album that sort of gets at that moment where you get back and you realize, what do I have? What am I doing?
Boy, I feel like a lot of the songs sort of have that. I think the song that's closest to that is probably Before the Earth Was Round.
Mm-hmm.
It's this sort of absurdist allegory where the whole world goes and they figure out that the earth is round and they have knowledge now and everything goes wrong because of it. You know, they sort of lose mystery and poetry.
The bite of the apple?
Yes, it is the bite of the apple. Exactly. Challenge for us personally, especially in making this record, was to keep it creative and to be looking for the things that actually turn us on creatively as opposed to following the pattern that works.
Mm-hmm.
Because even when you're not wildly successful financially and even when you're not at the top of the charts, anything that works gives everybody a reason to sort of push you in the direction of that thing that worked, and you can spend your life sort of imitating yourself. And and we had some things on our last record that were wildly successful, and coming home and trying to figure out how to play the part of yourself, you know, like, how am I going to be that person that wrote this thing 4 or 5 years ago and who I just don't associate myself with at all anymore. And it takes like some pretty big acts of courage, I think, to just be like, I'm not going to do anything like what I did last time. We've been having to describe this record. It's really difficult because it's a very, like, contradictory record. It's the happiest thing we've ever made and the saddest thing we've ever made. We're proud of it. That part's good.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Having us.
That's Damian Kulash and Tim Nordwind of the band OK Go. You can find a link to their latest music video and the making of it at npr.org. You're listening to Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Maybe it's not so bad.